Hey, kid, would you like some drugs? The first one is free.
Want to check out my van? I got some candy.
Hey, kid, want to join our gang and spray paint under a bridge?
No, no!
Bug off, man.
I'm going roller skating.
I want to be addicted to roller skating, not crack.
Because we roller skate today, we will go to college tomorrow.
Prison is full of people that have never roller skated.
I say no to drugs.
I say no to gangs.
I say no to meth.
I say no to reefer.
I say yes to roller skating.
TBTL.
Booty scoops do poop poop.
Booty da ba 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 da 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 skitty dee 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 da ba ba doo 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 yo yo yo.
I feel like we're just like in that tired mode where you're delirious and you're laughing at silly things.
Do you have any idea who I am? I'm a verified Yelp complainer.
It's not that bad, honestly. It is, but it's not.
Make sure your bathroom really has got a toilet that's way too high and kind of big.
Also, two plungers. Two plungers says it all.
Let's get everything set up in here. We got the bell. Okay, that's working. This thing happening over here. Okay, get the...
Rudy, get in here. It's time for the thing.
Hello and welcome, everyone, to a Monday morning edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
This song goes out to all the coffee lovers of the world.
My name is Luke Burbank. I am your host.
Wait a minute. Who are you?
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill, in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. A foggy day in Bellingham Town. I think it's going to be nice today. We had a gorgeous weekend here in the Pacific Northwest. It was relatively warm. There were blue skies. I got out there. Went to Lummi Island, walked on the beach with the dog.
I'm sorry, I'm tan. I like to be tan. It just feels good.
It was a wonderful weekend, and we have maybe one or two more days of that nice weather before it goes back to, typical Northwest winter weather, which is not great. The good news, though, is that we have a fascinating episode of TBTL ready to go. It's episode 2814 in a collector series.
To that end, we'd like a moment of your time to talk to you about video interpolation.
That's not the only thing we want to discuss. By the way, thank you to our dedicated listener and the purveyor of the Marsupial Gurgle podcast, our friend Lynn, who reminded me that I guess I got the numbering of the shows off last week. I believe today is, in fact, episode 2814 in a collector's series. I think I'm right on that. So hopefully that is all...
Let the fun begin.
That is all dialed in and fixed, and we are ready to tell you about some of these top stories we have today, including the most popular post ever on Instagram was posted recently and has received north of 25 million likes, and it is a photograph of an egg.
Welcome to the internet.
This may or may not be some kind of a subtle negging of Kylie Jenner, or people might just love photos of eggs. We'll talk about that. Also, I watched that Marie Kondo organizing show on Netflix, and I was thinking about how I wanted to talk about this topic today, because I can already hear myself saying things that are going to insult or offend, I should say, a number of the listeners. And I don't mean to do that. But I just think that I feel like I could save everyone a lot of time who's on that show.
It's a waste of time to do that.
I have one simple piece of advice I think that would just fix almost everything. So we will talk about that. And we will talk about a couple of actual personal friends of ours and I think awesome radio hosts, Ron and Don. Of Cairo, formerly of Cairo Radio, the Ron and Don show is no more. Afternoons on Cairo, and so we'll remember those guys and that show, and talk about that a little bit too. Coming up here. here on the program. Coming up with this guy, the longest running Cobro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships, their grace, and their splendor. He's wickedly talented. He's one man celebrating his own strength, and he lives every month like it's Trucktober. He's Andrew
Fireball
Walsh, and he joins me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, friend, and how was your weekend?
It was good. You know, Luke, it just goes by so quickly, right? I hate Mondays.
I'll tell you what.
I was thinking about that. You know why? Because I, as I'm logging into my email here while you're chatting, I was just kind of looking at my Gmails, my unread emails. What I do is if I sometimes if I have an email and I have actually read it, but it needs some sort of attention, I mark it as unread so that I'll come back to it theoretically. And I realize I have not really looked at I have not gone back and looked at these emails since Friday. I see some emails that remind me of how excited I was for Friday to come around. Last week, I was just dying for Friday to come around, and then it came around, and now it's Monday, and I'm like, where did the weekend go? So that's some real classic Monday blues banter for you at the top of the show.
Tell me why I don't like Mondays. Mm. Tell me why I don't like Mondays. Did you do anything over the course of the weekend that because here's my theory, and I have to. I mean, I don't know how long I'm going to have to leave this preface on everything that I say or this disclaimer, but obviously I've been on a whole journey of discovery. But what I realized was I think that the weekend flies by for me when I don't do anything. It's weird. You would think that for me the weekend and for most of us what we need to do on the weekend is really just recharge, just rest and refresh. And that might be exactly what some people need to do. But I for some reason – like this weekend, because it was nice, and I knew this is like maybe one of the only nice weekends we're going to have for months and months. I was like, I'm going to try to make hay while the sun shines. So got out there in the wilderness with the dog, did a big long walk on Saturday, and then drove out to Lummi Island yesterday. And I was trying to kind of pack. So oddly enough, I feel kind of rested and refreshed and okay about today. Now, had I stayed in the whole weekend watching TV or watching football, it helped that all the teams I was rooting for were getting their butts kicked. So that kind of that helped me detach from football watching. But anyway, my point is, I wonder if maybe what we do over the course of the weekend affects how we feel about the weekend on Monday morning.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I would say that I had the perfect mix of everything that I need in a weekend. Like, I don't mind going out one weekend night, but I try to make it a rule that I'm not going to do something both on Friday night and Saturday night. And then Sundays, if possible, I like to have like a real kind of classic Sunday where I start cooking kind of early and just a real puttering day. And I will say I achieved that perfectly. Friday, I was exhausted, nice. Was able to just kind of chill out. And then on Saturday, went over to a bunch of friends got together to play this game called Secret Hitler, which sounds worse than it is. Wow. But it's an actual game. I've actually played it twice now.
The presidential race starts earlier and earlier.
Yeah, right. It isn't. I kind of don't want to get too.
I cannot believe he just told that joke.
Bogged down in it, but it's a game that I guess is kind of. I think the gamers in our audience will kind of know this kind of format. I think it's based on other games called like Monster and Werewolf, where essentially you have a bunch of people in the room. Somebody is like in some of these games, like secretly a werewolf or secretly a monster, and you got to kind of figure it out.
Right, Mafia, I think, is
that
a game that my cousins brought back from Russia. Seriously, they did. And it's really fun. You sit in a room, bunch of people. You got to close your eyes. I forget the rules of it, but I remember it being super duper fun to play.
Yeah, and this is very similar to that. You have a bunch of people who are like liberals, they're the kind of good guys. But then in the group, you have a few fascists and one person is secretly Hitler. And only certain people have certain information and nobody knows who the other people are in the room. So you can go. I mean, as a matter of fact, it was... I don't know, man. You know me, like, I'm not a huge, like, dinner party person. You say, hey, you want to come over for, like, a dinner party? And I'm like, no, that sounds like all the ingredients of a social engagement I don't like, which is mostly small talk and, like, food that I may or may not
like. And literally the ingredients are an issue for you.
Exactly. Whereas if you say, come on over, we have a game to play, I don't do that a lot, but I find it, like, I really like that. It gives everybody something to do. It gives me a focus. I don't have to just kind of sit around and be like, what did you talk about on the show this week? Or what do you do? Or, like, I don't know. I feel a lot of pressure to keep conversations going, which I probably don't need to feel that pressure. It's part of some sort of social anxiety that I have. But, like, I got to say, if you say, come on over, let's play this game, and we were playing it, by the time it was 11 o'clock when the host was kind of like, you know what, we should probably wrap this up. And I was like, are you kidding me? I thought we were just getting going. I would have sat there and played until 1 in the morning. So, anyway, that was really great on a Saturday. And then Sunday,
you're like, I'm Italy. Hitler makes some decent points.
That's the one thing, too, I got to say. I want to be cautious here. So this is the second time I've played this game with a totally different crew of people. It's just kind of coincidentally.
I have a feeling this is going to put you in a weird spot. But who is this? How have you played this game with two different groups of people? Is this a game that, like, is Genevieve the one? How are you playing this same game with two different groups of people?
I think it's a coincidence. We don't have the game. Okay. These are two different groups of people with no cross contamination at all in the friend groups.
Weird.
Yeah, I think it's just kind of a thing. I think it's for a certain
is it going
kind
around?
Of person,
is it
maybe? Yeah.
Do you? Is it a? Do you? Is there are there? Like, is there a playing board for this? I assume mm-hmm. this is just like a game that you could just learn from the internet, or is there actual?
No,
like,
no. There's cards
things you
and
buy.
A board. There's something that you
buy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway,
well, that's different than that mafia game that I was referring to. It, like, you, there are no. There's you just sit around in a room at some kind of a guessing game anyway. Mm-hmm. So maybe these are a little bit different. But
it's
so
got
I see,
a little
so this
bit
is
more
kind of having
rules,
a moment.
But, maybe, yeah. I don't know. A couple of different folks, and coincidentally, none of these folks are anybody that you know either. They're just two guy. What I'm trying to say is we just have a lot of friends, and they all love to play Secret Hitler. But yeah, that was fun. And then yesterday, like you say, the weather could not have been more perfect. It was great.
Yeah, I went out and found this stretch of. I was going to say a stretch of secret beach, but it's not a secret. I just wasn't technically allowed to be on it, but you know how I roll. Basically, there was this stretch of beach on Lummi Island. I wanted to go watch the sunset, and so I went over there with the dog, and I because Carrie was meeting her mom for some lunch, and so I wanted to go to this one specific side of Lummi Island where I know that the sunsets are really beautiful, and there's this entrance to this beach that is reserved for some condominium club. But the condos are actually pretty far away from the beach. They're not like right on the water. They're kind of like across a road. And I figured, are they really going to know I'm not part of the condo club? So I went down there, and what I realized was one side of this beach, the way you enter it was to this thing you're supposed to be a member of the condo club for. And then the other end of it, there was like this big kind of smooth area of rock where the water had already come in enough that it blocked it off. So my point is, it was bookended, and therefore there was no one on the beach except for me and Rudy. And it was a gorgeous Sunday. It must just be the time of year. People didn't have time to make their plans to go to Lummi Island in the middle of January, even though the days were nice. You know what I mean? Like, had it been August or something, that place would have had thousands of people. But as it was just me and the dog. And so we just wandered around out there, sat, watched the sunset. I obsessively videotaped the dog on my phone looking at the sunset, which I felt like was not being totally present. But it was really nice. And I was just trying to absorb it all as much as I could, knowing that I have a busy week where I'm going to be going to Atlanta later. This week to do a story for CBS. And just like I said, we're going to re-enter a phase of really depressing weather. And I don't use the term depressing jokingly. I mean, it really does bum people out and bum me out when it's just crummy day after day after day. So I think I'm feeling pretty good on this Monday morning because I feel like I absorbed the maximum amount of the positives of this weekend that I could.
You going to get your boy a Hotlanta magnet? If you got me one, I wouldn't say no to it.
I mean, if you would like me to pick you up, I can pick you up any number of things from the airport bookstore / gift shop. You want a Hotlanta t-shirt? Sure. You want a Freaknik coaster or koozie? I got that for you. Have you ever bought – we actually are literally hitting the moment we need to go to a break. But I don't know if I've ever bought one of those gifts in the gift shop at the airport to represent, or really more likely to like give somebody something from the particular town I'm in. And I kind of actually feel bad about that, believe it or not. You probably thought I was going to say that stuff all seems like crap to me, but like I kind of wish I would have long ago when I started traveling a lot for work, I wish I would have developed a system for buying a little tchotchke and then maybe just bringing it home, giving it to Addie or I guess giving it to Carrie or something. I do think that's a nice thought. I also travel a lot for work so that you start to get into just like more snow globes than really a person can use, even though one
how
says
many
Denver.
Can, yeah, how
one,
many can you use, I guess, raises a question there.
1.5. Hmm. That's what the scientists have found.
Sounds
so
messy.
I when I come back from a trip, this is actually much more. This was much more on my mind. Not so much so that I actually bought anything, but this was more on my mind when Addie was a kid in her maybe between 10 and 15. I was like, am I being a bad parent because I'm not bringing home a little tchotchke from these various towns? But then that was as far as the question went in my mind. I never really went and bought any of those things. But like, it seems like a thing when you're a kid. Like, if your parents go on a trip, don't they bring you home a little present?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, my question for you is, where do you buy most of your Rock and Roll Hall of Fame T-shirts? Then I assume that you got those at Cleveland Hopkins International Airport. But are you ordering those online?
If you look at the T-shirts closely, you'll realize that it's. They all have bands that didn't make it into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, it's a
those are the dead
shirt.
Stock. Those are the T-shirts they print because they obviously have to cover all their eventualities. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they print them for bands that end up not making the cut. And then those shirts are very cheap.
That's why you have the one that says Squeeze. Now it makes sense.
See, that's a weird choice because I think Squeeze could be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I was going to try to go more, I don't know, Jay Giles band. But who knows? They're probably in there too.
I'm looking up whether or not Squeeze in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I also don't know. Squeeze is one of those bands where if you told me they sang some song, I'd be like, oh, yeah, I know that song. But I could not name
what?
One
Pulling
Squeeze
Muscles
song.
From a Shell, Tempted, Cool for Cats. Those are the three songs by Squeeze I can name.
Yeah, no, and none of those ring a bell to me. I mean, maybe again if I heard it. Well, maybe we go to break, we bump back in with some Squeeze.
Let's definitely do that. Let's come back with... either Tempted or Pulling Muscles from a Shell. Let's go Pulling Muscles from a Shell. And then let me say this quickly. Tom York from Radiohead last week, I think, I won't even say made headlines, but the topic of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Tom York came up because I guess Radiohead is being inducted and he is not going to be able to be there because he's doing some other project. He wrote a piece of music that's being played by a symphony somewhere. And the way that some corners of the internet were trying to frame it was like Tom York thinks he's too good for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And to be honest with you, I thought, yeah, he is. He is 100%
exactly
too good for a pyramid in Cleveland yep. that recently admitted Aerosmith. Yes, he is too good for it.
Yeah, I don't really care about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame at all. I have no beef. I didn't know Aerosmith recently was inducted, but that
I mean,
makes
I
sense
assume
to
they
me.
Were.
It seems like a band that... Oh, I assume, I just have never understood or gotten behind. I've never been to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I mean, I lived there for at least a decade while it was in existence. I just have zero interest. And also, as my friend one time said, he's like, I just have zero interest in being inside of a museum where people are talking in hushed voices looking at John Lennon's report card. Like, I don't care about John Lennon's report card or what
See,
have you.
I do care about that. Like, I would go to, if I were to travel to England and there were maybe like a Beatles museum near Abbey Road that had cool old stuff, I might find that interesting. To me, the whole process of like, to me, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is just the brick and mortar version of the Grammys. Like, who cares? Like, I guess it's like presumably now there's probably a lot about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that I don't know. And maybe they have a wing that's like these are bands you haven't heard of. But mostly I would imagine the way they measure if a band should be in there is were they super popular? And that's a lot of times for me a terrible way to measure if a band is good or not. Like the idea of trying to decide who gets to be in that museum, quote-unquote museum, I guess it's not a quote-unquote museum. It is a museum. It's a place where they house things. Yeah. You can look at them. All right, so let's take a break here. We will come back. We'll play some of the band Squeeze, and then we'll do some top stories too, and talk about Ron and Don, our friends who don't have a radio show in Cairo anymore. That's all coming up on TBTL. Stay with us. They do it down on Canvas Sands. They do it at Waikiki. Lazing about the beach all day at night. The cricket's creepy. Squinting faces at the sky. A Harold Robbins paperback. Surfers drop their balls and dry. Is this ringing any bells now?
It rings zero bells. I don't think I know this song. I mean, I'm sure I've been in a car when this has been on the radio just by the law of averages.
Hold on, go,
but no,
go
this
here.
Doesn't ring a bell.
Can you bring it up here for the chorus? Maybe this will. Nothing?
Not really. So again, I mean, I feel like, I mean, there's no way that I have not heard this before, but it's not like, oh, yeah, this song.
Yeah, because these guys, I kind of think of them as a band a little bit like Robin Hitchcock and the Egyptians. Kind of like, I feel like people who like music, like who know from music are like, these guys are kind of, I think, held up as a, or maybe like the band XTC. Like, they're a band that people who are into music are like, and you have good musical taste, and you tend to you and I tend to have a lot of this, well, in certain cases, a lot of the same kind of musical interest. So I would have figured you would know them just because they are one of those bands that I feel like people reference a lot.
Well, this is definitely not what I imagined them sounding like, and I like it way more than I thought. For some reason, I always thought Squeeze was a prog rock band. So this is actually makes me want to go, but no joke, that makes me want to go back and listen to them. I don't know why Squeeze is such a blind spot for me, but I really thought they were like weird, noodly, 7-minute songs, potentially about druids.
I'm trying to think, like, prog rock... That's like, yes, right? That's like, yes, the most famous prog rock band.
Yeah, I think, you know what? I think I was getting Yes and Squeeze maybe confused.
That could make sense. I could. Who does the you're killing yourself, but you don't believe it. Get out. Who does that song? Who, like, yeah, let me put it this way. I have a big blind spot when it comes to progressive rock, and I don't see that blind spot getting fixed anytime soon.
Yeah. I don't have a huge desire to. Like, there is a bunch of music that I still listen to because it reminds me, because I got into it when I was a kid and now I have nostalgic feelings towards it. But I'm not interested in expanding my knowledge base for some obscure bands, if that makes sense. Like, I do have a huge prog rock hole. I have a hole in my heart, and it's in the shape of prog rock. Now, in my knowledge, but, like, I think there was a time when I'd be like, I need to explore this. I need to get into this because there's a chance that this will really ring with me. And now I'm kind of like, I'm 42. Who knows how much time I have left on this earth? I don't think I need to go back and see whether or not I'm into prog rock because I have a feeling I'm not.
I am very excited because I signed up for Spotify, which is – that's not even true. I had signed up for it a long time ago. But I kept hitting this point where it wanted me to – pay money per month to get the better version of Spotify, and I'm, you know how it is, and the listeners know how it is. If they donate to this show, there are lots and lots of little things in our life now that cost between $5 and $10 a month, right? And you can, like, you can just sign up for all of them, or at some point, and we've all been through this, you kind of have to go, well, now what is the priority? And so I use Pandora a lot. And so that one I was paying to have no commercials, and I was like, I can't have two of these music services and pay for the no commercials. But it turns out that I can listen to Addie's playlists on Spotify. I don't have to pay any money. If I'm willing to have Spotify just be a conduit through which I get music from my daughter, I guess that doesn't cost me any money. And I am so psyched because yesterday I finally sat down, went back in, logged back into Spotify, updated everything. And then I could immediately see playlists that Addie had created, including one that she created for my sister's clothing store in Portland called Button. It was just called Button Playlist. And I was like, this is probably good on a Sunday morning because, you know, it's a store. They don't want to have a bunch of, like, music that's too jarring. And it was like, I know I've been on a whole thing about my daughter of late and her musical taste, but it was just like, it was so great because there was just so many songs that I had not heard before that I was like, oh, my God, this is great. What is this? Oh, like I had that experience 20 times in the first 23 songs. So now I feel like I got the pipeline of new cool music. I don't even know if Addie knows I'm checking on this. Watch, there's going to be a playlist and called My Real Feelings About My Father. And it's just going to be a ton right. of really dark music and prog rock.
Funny. Danzig, huh? Okay. Danzig, right into Yes. I wouldn't have done that. And Spotify, I think you just said this, but to be clear, because, yeah, I pay for the subscription service, but all that does is it takes the commercials out, right? Like, you have full accessibility with Spotify if you don't pay. You just have to listen to a commercial once every few songs in most cases. Right?
I didn't hear any commercials, I think because, and this is so boring to the listeners, apologies, but, and to those of you who heard me on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me this weekend, or saw The Dog on CBS Sunday Morning, and you're like, hey, what's a TBTL? What it is me speculating on the rules of Spotify. So welcome to the show. I think there's something to do with the fact that just because I was listening to somebody else's playlist or whatever, it falls in some other category. What I know is I listened for 3-4 hours yesterday nice. While I was home puttering, and I didn't hear any commercials. And I was really excited by that development because the only reason I wanted to sign up for it was so I could easily have Adelaide easily transfer music to me. And this now seems to work great for that. So I'm very excited.
Can I update you on one thing in my life?
Yes.
There is a Facebook page called Let's Get Squeezed into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And the last posting was merely 2 days ago. So it would appear that either these Squeeze fans don't realize that their band is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, or more likely, Squeeze is not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I'm sure it's not because – God, please don't wind me up again. I'm sure it's not because it didn't sell out arenas across America, you know, which I know that's not the only – we probably have some listener – we do have listeners in the Cleve, and I know that they've actually mentioned you could go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So I don't want to crap all over something that our listeners like because that's what I'm going to do when we talk about Marie Kondo. Has that come up on Spotless yet?
No, I haven't watched it yet. I've been talking to some folks because it just dropped like a week ago, right? I think they dropped the entire season a week ago.
I think so. I only watched the first episode, but yeah, pretty recently.
Yeah, no. So I haven't watched it yet. I'm kind of hearing. I don't know. Actually, I guess the early reviews. I saw you kind of making fun of it on Twitter, so I don't know how
people
you are
love
feeling
it.
About it. But yeah, I heard some good things mostly. Yeah.
No, I understand why it's popular. I'll watch the whole series. We'll get into it maybe when we get into those top stories. Should we thank the donors of the day? I was going to try to do something clever here and pick one of the songs off of this playlist I was playing yesterday, but I think it involves too many parts of my brain trying to work at the same time because it's in Spotify, which is in a whole other category. Let's dance with Who Brung Us. Let's go with our usual song. Maybe by tomorrow I'll get it together and have some special Donors of the Day music.
Thank you, baby.
As I was just saying, we're all beset by lots of little costs every month. And that is why the fact that we have a list of donors of the day, people who donated or agreed to donate during the TBTL-a-thon, and they make those donations every month so this show can exist, that is not lost on us, that you're prioritizing TBTL, and we really appreciate it. Today we want to thank Krista Gilbert of – no, you know what? I'm looking at some old donor of the day information, I believe. Although Krista Gilbert, we do very much appreciate your support that I believe we appreciated on Friday, too. This is weird. I have a specific memory last night of dialing up all of the new folks, but I must have failed to transfer the information over.
Things might have gotten out of order for you. If you want, I can pick up here. I have the list in front of me, and maybe you can pop in when
you're
there.
Oh, my God. Luann Sewell.
That's who we're talking
about.
Bothell,
Washington. Yeah. Amber Skrent of... Would this be Cairo, Michigan?
I'm going to say Cairo. No? Cairo, Michigan. C-A-R-O.
I mean, your guess is Cairo. Better than mine. You grew up in the Midwest. Brian Wilcoxon of Tallahassee, Florida, Olivia Kent of Rockville, Maryland, Renee Qualls of Enumclaw, Washington, and Sarah Adelman of Seattle. Sarah, Renee, Olivia, Brian, Amber, and Luann, thank you so much for donating to TBTL. We would not be able to do this show for our jobs if you guys were not donating. And if we couldn't do the show for our jobs, we would have other jobs. I shudder to think what those would be, but they would not be this, and there would be no TBTL. We would not be here on episode 2814 in a collector series. Did you know that I had the numbering off last week and you were just didn't want to break my heart? Because you had it right on the website. That was the thing that I realized. I must have just been saying the wrong show number when I was announcing the number on the show.
What were you? I didn't notice. How off were you? Off by one for a big chunk of time, or what happened?
I don't know. That would involve me going back and listening to the episodes. I just got an email from Lynn, but I went back and I checked. The website was accurate. You are my North Star on this. So thank you to you, and thank you to the listeners who support the show. In particular, thank you to the donors of the day.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
Let's talk about our friends Ron and Don. The Ron and Don show, it was announced on Friday, is no longer... this is the only version of Taps. It's in public domain. The other version is owned by Disney, and you're not allowed to use it. So, big news on Friday, and big news to our listeners because there's so much overlap. So many people that listen to TBTL found out about us because of TBTL's days on Cairo, or because of maybe when I was doing the show with Dave Ross, or even when the Andrew Walsh show was happening on Cairo. Like, you still fill in there. There's just so much. Again, there's so much overlap between our world and the world of Cairo Radio, and we talk about the Ron and Don show all the time, and we, you know, I mean, dazzling detail, that's from Ron and Don. That's something that they say, giving them all four, stop the show. There's like, we say so many things that actually got their origin on the Ron and Don show. So I have to be honest with you, I was extremely bummed out when I heard that the show was going away, because even though even though there might be moments where I didn't agree with what they were talking about, or I wasn't completely in line with every single thing they said or every single segment they tackled, but I sure thought it was a well done radio show, and I sure like those guys. And I just think there are not enough shows like that out there on talk radio anymore. You basically have political talk radio, which almost always skews conservative. You have sports talk. Then you have this kind of like music radio happy talk where you're playing Battle of the Sexes, where there's like staged callers pretending that they're discovering that their boyfriend is cheating. What there isn't enough of, in my opinion, is just kind of what it is Ron and Don do. They kind of talk about their lives. They do talk about local issues. They talk about sports. They kind of brought it all in under the same, you know, sort of, I guess, show every, you know, 5 days a week. And I just really, particularly when I was in Seattle, I really like getting in the car, turning on my radio, switching over to Cairo, hearing them, hearing Rachel Bell, hearing our friend Sean DeTore. Just a good show. And I'm really, there aren't that many of those shows left. And now there's one less, at least on Cairo. And it really bums me out.
Yeah. And they really had a following. You know, you have the talk shows that kind of, you can almost tell that they're going to be a little ephemeral. I would say that about the Andrew Walsh show. I don't think anybody really thought that, including myself at the top of the list, thought that like, oh, 10 years from now, there's going to, or 13 years in the, to use the Ron and Don number. That's how long they had this particular show on the air. They really built a following. And I'm sure the majority of their listeners, I was reading so many comments from listeners just to figure out like how people are reacting, like the Cairo listeners. Yeah, I crawled into the comment section of mynorthwest.com, which is the website for Cairo. No, don't. I recommend everybody don't do that. It doesn't make you feel better about humanity. But it seemed like there was a lot of, hey, I didn't agree with these guys all the time, but man, they were my buds. They were the people I listened to every day on my commute. And they just like, you know, again, 13 years is a decent amount of time to really not just have have a radio show where you're talking to the general public, but kind of develop a bond with listeners and have a following. And, you know, we talked about how when you guys, you know, got canned from Cairo all those years ago, you were on the air for a year and a half, maybe a little bit more at that point. You had really developed, obviously, I'm going to call it a cult following, a rabid following. And it was so unusual, but so great of the current program director then to give you a night to go, to trust you guys to have, I think, one more show where you could say goodbye to your audience. That doesn't often happen in commercial radio, and it sounds like what happened this time. And, you know, I got to be a little bit careful. I guess I'm technically an employee still of Cairo, and clearly nobody on Cairo seems to be acknowledging this at all. I don't think anybody has acknowledged it on the air. It's almost like the show has just disappeared. It sounds like, you know, Ron and Don wrapped up a show, did a normal show, checked the cars, did the things, you know, and then got off the air and were told, hey, that was your last show. Thank you for your service. And now it's just so weird the way it is handled. And again, I think that is... that's probably way, way more typical in commercial radio. And it just, I think it's shocking to everybody. It was certainly shocking to me. I think it was really shocking to the audience.
Yeah, I think it was a huge mistake on the part of whoever is in charge over there to not let them at least say goodbye to their listeners. Because you want a peaceful transition of power if you can. I mean, even if Ron and Don are upset and frustrated about their time at Cairo ending, they certainly are. They probably would like to get another radio show somewhere, so they're not going to burn the place down on their way out. And they're also not idiots. Like, they love their listeners and they respect them and they appreciate mm-hmm. that those people made it possible for them to have the show. Like, I don't think they were going to do anything that you would have, as the management, would have regretted. And if anything, you would have then had a better chance of handing off some number of those listeners over to the next show. As it was, Eric Lacidus wrote a piece in the Seattle Times over the weekend about this, basically saying, like, and I'm sure the number is higher now, but there was like 1,000 comments on the Facebook page of the show, of the Ron and Don show. And it was, I think, pretty much 100% people just being like, WTF. So if you're Cairo, you just ticked off everybody who loved the Ron and Don show are now mad at you. Like, I don't think it had to go that way. And, like, it's an old school radio mentality of, like, oh, you don't have a show anymore. We're confiscating your key card and we're having security escort you to the front door. It's like, I mean, let's just have a little, I mean, let's assume that people are not the worst version of humanity all the time. Like, I think they're probably capable of going on and doing a radio show that would give them a chance to say goodbye that wouldn't, again, like, somehow embarrass the overall, you know, radio station or whatever. Like, I think that was a critical error. I'm just bummed. This is on a personal level. I'm just bummed because that radio station is just not, and this is how life works usually, that radio station is just bears little resemblance to the place I used to work, which is fine. I don't work there anymore. They don't owe me anything. But I think part of what I loved about turning Ron and Don on was that it reminded me of a really, in certain ways, a really fun time in my life when I was working at Cairo, and I like the familiarity of the whole thing. And so to have that gone now, and I'm concerned that this is just personally my politics, they're probably leaning more into the conservative thing. When I went into I dipped my toe in the comment section of the Cairo website last night, Andrew, and I got like 4 comments in and I was like, I'm out. Mm-hmm. Because it was just
tough.
Literally the third person in said, I stopped listening to Ron and Don because they made me feel bad about the fact that I don't spend all my time worrying about black and brown people. And I was just like, okay, Jeff in Auburn, I'm out. Like, I just think, I honestly think this I think is a move to try to consolidate the worst elements of the Cairo listening public, which are ex-urban, conservative, I think not as open-minded as they could be folks. And I liked that Cairo would have on shows that didn't always do that, even if it meant maybe they left a few listeners, as it were, on the table. A few ratings points were being passed on because they were providing what I thought was a variety of points of view. And I think it's, you know, look, there's a reason why the guy that's on before Ron and Don has killer ratings. It's because I think He plays the talk radio game of appealing to people's basest instincts. That's popular on talk radio, unfortunately. And Cairo, I thought, was making a decision to not do that a lot of the time, and I liked that. And I think that this, now that one of the primary hosts of the show is somebody who literally just got done filling in for Rush Limbaugh, I don't think that's an indicator that the show, that the station is going in a more open-minded direction.
Yeah, and not to make this all about me, but and I promise I didn't make it all about me right away. Like, I didn't read the news and was like, what does this mean for my fill-in? But I, because I was really shocked, and of course I, you know, reached out to Ron to make sure I'm closer to Ron than Don, so I reached out to him to make sure that you know, he was doing okay and everything. But it was about 24 hours into this when everything started to settle down. I started thinking, oh wow, you know what? I wonder what that does mean for me and my potential to fill in the future, because the main gig that I filled in on there was for the Ron and Don show, which, you know, it worked with my schedule, and also I think it worked with my personality type. I came, Ron and Don, in some people's view, were like a very liberal show based on maybe, again, like what came before them in the schedule. But right now, the people, the new show has three different people, but I think the main, the person with the kind of the biggest personality, the person who I assume is going to be driving the show, is a very conservative guy. And, you know, he's very nice to me. I see him around the office all the time. But, like, I don't personally, even if they were to ask me to fill in on this show, which I'm not saying they even would, but if they did, I don't really think I want to go back to like a situation where you're kind of the liberal who's supposed to respond to the conservative who gets to frame all the arguments and conversations. And I'm not trying to sound bitter here. I just kind of know, I've never worked with this guy before, but I just kind of know how that whole thing goes. And I have no desire to kind of be a part of that world. And it occurred to me, like, what with this? And then, you know, there aren't a lot of other opportunities. And it occurred to me, like, wow, this could mean that I never fill in on Cairo again, which is a place where I have worked in some capacity or another for a long time. Now, by the way, I want to be clear. I have no idea if that's the case. And maybe it's not even probable. I mean, I assume at some point it's going to be some sort of holiday week, and they're going to have scraped the absolute bottom of the – exactly. They're going to get very desperate at some point.
I mean, maybe I will get desperate. We either just turn the station off for the weekend or we let Walsh back in. That will happen.
Exactly. So anyway, again, not to make it all about me, but at a certain point I was kind of like, oh, wow, that this could be a change in kind of my life as well.
I guess it's – I have a lot of kind of strong feelings about this. And I really should not have looked in the comment section, because that brought back a lot of stuff for me. Because when we were doing TBTL, you know, the typical Cairo listener hated us, because the typical Cairo listener, not every person, in fact, all of the people that are listening, not all, many of the people listening to my voice right now are Cairo listeners. And they are TBTL listeners because they used to hear us on Cairo. So I don't want to say all the Cairo listeners, but there is a vocal segment of the Cairo listenership that is just, they are not picking up what I'm putting down, and they were not shy about like literally creating entire websites dedicated to how much they hated me and Jen, and to a lesser degree Sean, because nobody can hate Sean because Sean is lovely. But like, reading this, it's just the classic kind of trolly person who's like, thinks that them not listening to Ron and Don is what took Ron and Don down, even though they don't. They're not an Arbitron family. And side note, they were like the third person into the messages when the show got canceled. So they're clearly not – they didn't detach from the station. Like, you know what I mean? It's like these people that are just like – they feel like – again, they feel like be the fact that Ron and Don occasionally, between lighting a blue light in their heart and being very pro-law enforcement, that they occasionally made the mistake of saying, yeah, we should also have some reasonable gun control laws. Like, that was enough to put off some crank out in, you know, wherever they are. And then those people are, like, gleefully in the comment section celebrating that they think they kind of got the show canceled. And it's just, like, that element – I mean, when you're making a radio show that's supposed to be consumed by thousands of people, some of those thousands of people are going to be not great. And it just seems like I didn't like the feeling of seeing those people delighted by this. And then, by the way, that's another thing. If you want to see who's delighted by the passing of Ron and Don, then ask yourself, is that a person that you want to hang out with? That indicates something. You know what I mean?
Right. Like,
that's all you need to know. And from just a format, from a programmatic standpoint, I just think it's a bad move by Cairo, because whatever Ron and Don's ratings were, and I, of course, have no info on that, I can't imagine that you're going to do better in the ratings with I mean, maybe this new show will be able to create a whole sense of identity, but it takes a long time to really create a sense of identity on a radio show. And I think when you turned on that show, you felt like you knew these people on the show and you knew the segments. I mean, those guys are geniuses at what is called programmatics or formatting. Like, the way they did that show was very intentional. And, like, it takes a long time to build that up with the listeners, the, so people know what they're going to hear and they look forward to the segments and they look forward to – like, that's a whole thing. Maybe this new show will also be great with that. But my guess is it'll be much more like a standard talk radio show. And I think that that's bad. I don't think that people – like, I think that there was something really valuable to the familiarity of Ron and Don and feeling like you knew them. And that's why I think a lot of people turned on their radios and turned their radios to that station in the afternoon. And now that that's gone, I don't think that just throwing in more conservative talk is going to counter for the fact that there were so many people that considered themselves their identity to be a Ron and Don listener.
Yeah, it was funny to see TBTL evoked so much. I don't think TBTL has been evoked in
was
the comment
it?
Section so much since since you're on the air.
No,
I mean, not tons, but let's say one in every 15 comments or something. When I gotta say I went into this mode of really being hungry for reaction to this. You know, I'm off of Facebook. I don't usually like these kind of cesspool places where people kind of like whatever, just kind of either gang up or pile on or whatever. But then something like this happens and there is no information coming out of Cairo, the radio station, about it. And you're just like, you find yourself when something like this kind of shocks your system, you just, you want more information. And the only place to go is to read comments. So I don't think there were any open Facebook threads that I was looking at, but I certainly looked at Twitter comments. I kept refreshing those, and I was going to My Northwest, and then, you know, if it was written up in another publication, I was looking at what the comments there were. And I definitely, let's say one out of 15 or so said something like, you know, first TBTL, now Ron and Don. I have no reason to listen to Cairo anymore. And I'm like, wow, you're going
those
back
are our listeners.
Ways. Yeah, that was 10 years ago.
Broth.
11, I guess.
Yeah. So, anyway, so I don't.
Can
I don't
give
think
you
I
a bit
anything.
Of a bit of a bright spot here, though? I, as we were talking,
yeah.
I decided to just open up my Cairo email, and not tons in there, but the boss did send out the new fill-in schedule for the next week for both hosts and producers, and there is a young man who will be filling in as the producer for the night show on Thursday and Friday of this week. His last name is remarkably similar to yours. His first name is David. It says he used to live in a basement, and his last name is
weird.
Burbank. Yeah, so he will be
does
producing
not sound, does not
the
ring
night
any,
show.
Any bells. Well, that's good. Well, there you go. Once again, there's always some Burbank buried in Cairo at a little listen to time slot trying to make things as weird as possible.
Mm-hmm. And I know where the Burbanks are buried.
I know where all the Burbanks are buried. I know that I probably haven't said anything useful or compelling about the Ron and Don show moving on, but I guess I'll try to make up for that by just saying I think it's a good radio show. I think that we need more good radio shows out there, particularly on commercial radio where there's so much pressure with consolidation of the industry and stuff. I really hope that they keep doing the show somewhere else, whether it's in Seattle or in another town. And I'm bummed out that they're gone. But those guys have always been really good to us, too, and really, you know, good to TBTL, even though I'm sure it made them crazy to listen to how many things we did that were the opposite. So the thing about the Ron and Don show is that they're very smart about maximizing their listeners, getting people to listen for as much time as possible. Everything that they did was motivated by being a successful radio show. And I don't mean that in a cynical way. I mean they just were really good at all that stuff. And TBTL was arguably the worst at that. And even though I was sitting there at night flailing away, doing things that were actively driving listeners away, they were always very nice to me, which I appreciated. And so,
yeah.
I don't want to say RIP. I want to say, we look to the future with excitement for the Ron and Don show. How about that?
It's not goodbye, it's toodaloo, which is something I believe they said in the final episode of Laverne and Shirley. I could be wrong about that. I just remember being a little kid, and somebody said that on a sitcom, and it really got to me. It made me cry. I want to say that, too, just me personally. Like, I was allowed to the fact that, like, when I came back into town, they let me come on the show and be a doofus. You know, I've said on the show many times that when I had my own show for a year on that station, I definitely kind of struggled and have embarrassment and was really, really learning the ropes the hard way. Not hard for me, but hard for the listeners. But then to kind of, you know, leave that behind, go on, do other things, and then come back into town and then kind of have this role where they would invite me on their show and I could basically just ride shotgun and just be sidekick and basically be a goofball and sometimes just derail them and like I don't know, they just, and they let me do that. And I think I'm, maybe when I was in the middle of it, I think I did appreciate it, but certainly now that I will probably, you know, never fill in on the Ron and Don show again, and you know, unless things really line up in a different direction, I think I'm really kind of taking stock about exactly how kind of lucky and what a kind of a privilege that was. And so I appreciate them letting me do my thing.
I think for me, we keep trying to end this and now I keep not ending it, but like, you know, there's great audio content being made all the time, and it's being made in places, I think, like this, that is to say, on demand and digital and podcasts and all that stuff. But there is something really, this is just my age, but till the day I die, there will always be something nice about turning on a radio station and being surprised. And like, because I like, okay, yesterday when I went out to the island with the dog, it was like I was listening to a bunch of amazing content. I listened to the most recent episode of Why Is This Happening, Chris's podcast. And with this guy who is an organizer from Indiana, it was some of the most compelling, I'll call it radio, I've heard in a long time. It was, his name's George Gall, I think. Anyway, I was just sitting there like completely riveted. But that was a different experience than when you get in the car and you turn on the radio and you don't even have to be riveted by what you're hearing. If you're just entertained, there's something about the happenstance of listening to what is already just on that I love. I guess my point is there are two different kinds of experiences. And so, like, you know, Ron and Don will continue to do some kind of show, I assume, and they will continue to make good stuff. And who knows if it'll be on a radio station or if it'll be through some kind of digital on-demand thing. I mean, I'm not here to sort of declare the end of good audio content, but I do think there's less and less good audio content that you hear on traditional commercial radio stations. And that bums me out because I am a fan of commercial radio, believe it or not, considering how much time I've spent in public radio in my career. And like, there's just, you can count on one hand the number of shows like Ron and Don's show that were probably on like in the country. So that's why I think I'm kind of bumming out today.
Yeah, I completely agree with what you said, and I won't go on my whole diatribe about it, but as much as I love podcasts and I love podcasting, there is a
– You better. Since you lost your fill-in gig on Cairo, this is your main thing, dude. You better serious about this.
But the sense of discovery, the sense of accidental discovery that comes along with just kind of scraping your dial and landing on something that catches your ear, maybe because it's a little bit weird and then you stay on it. You just don't get that with podcasts because by their very nature, you seek them out. Somebody says, hey, listen to this podcast, or hey, have you checked this out? Now, there's something really cool and communal about that too. But that feeling that you had, and I always think of TBTL, I didn't live in Seattle for much of the time that TBTL was on the air. I was listening to it as a podcast on the other side of the country, but I like to think about the listeners who just discovered TBTL because they were driving home late after work or whatever it was, and they're scanning the dial, and they're like, why are these people making fish in the studio? What's going on? You know, and like, and just being like, yeah. It catches your ear, and your head tilts like a dog, like, huh? What am I listening to? And then maybe it becomes a thing for you, and maybe it doesn't. And, you know, I still get that a little bit. There's a low-power FM station that I get in my neighborhood. You know, it's low power FM, so I guess you have to live pretty close to me to know, but it's like 102.1, and it's run by some students somewhere, and they're always playing some, I'm Shazamming it all the time, because I'm like, what is this now? And I just get an excitement out of that, and I've never gone to their website, I've never streamed, I've never seen if they have on-demand content. Isn't Hollow Earth something that's syndicated, or maybe it is?
No, Hollow Earth is mostly digital, but I didn't know if maybe they had gotten if they'd gotten a low power frequency somewhere.
They have little IDs, and in their IDs they mention an association with a college. It has a very college radio feel to it. Yeah, it doesn't seem pre-programmed. Although I don't often hear people talking now that you say that. I don't
think that's Seattle U's radio station.
Oh, okay, 102.1 here, and I don't know how big their reach is.
KXSU.
Yeah, that rings a bell. And anyway, so I got a kick out of that the other day. Like, I love public radio, but if I turn on my local public radio station, I'm pretty sure I know what I'm in for, especially now that they kind of got rid of their nighttime swing programming and stuff. And so knowing that there are little places on the actual radio dial for surprising things to happen, and when something messes up, you just keep going forward because it's live radio. And I don't know. There is something very special about that to me as well.
I watched that Marie Kondo show last night that I've already mentioned here, and I have to say, I'm sure that a lot of our listeners already know she's sort of an organizing expert. She's from Japan. She's kind of led this decluttering movement, which I'm a big fan of, I have to say. And I want to be careful with how I talk about this, because it's sort of like when we talked about sleeping on the show a while ago. And I was trying to make the point that I understand. Oh, you know what it was? It was something about that, talking about Arianna Huffington's book about getting more sleep, and pointing out that it's not equally easy for everybody to just get the same amount of sleep. It's not just a question of do people like sleep or not like sleep. Nobody doesn't like sleep. It's just not everyone has the same ability because of either their physical, mental, or their situational deal. You know, they could work the graveyard shift, they could have, you know, kids, they could be taking care of someone who's got, you know, illness, whatever. So it's the same thing with this, watching this Marie Kondo show on Netflix. I was watching her help this family declutter, and honestly, what it just comes down to is people just have too much shit. And like, it's not even like she comes in and her whole thing, I'm not anti Marie Kondo for the record, but she comes in and she's like, here's what you need. You need little boxes to put in your drawers so that you can put your ice cream scooper in its own like little box with other things that are about the same size so that your kitchen utensils are not just jangling around. And it's like, yeah, but also, do you need an ice cream scooper? How many times do you scoop ice cream with that ice cream scooper? Now, maybe it's a lot of times, but like, they went in the garage with the husband in this family, and like, there was just one garbage bag that was just full of just old cords that were tangled. But and these people were not like hoarders at all. Their house, I bet you a lot of the people watching the show were like, that house doesn't even look that dirty to me. I guess what I'm trying to say as it relates to the not wanting to hurt people's feelings is, and the idea of decluttering privilege is, I know that it's much harder to keep your life organized when you have little kids. I don't have little kids right now, and so I have much more time in my day to go through and do projects like decluttering projects, which I've been doing kind of a lot of lately. But for me, what it always comes down to is, like, we had this room, we call it the mud room. It's where the laundry is and stuff. And it was just a disaster. And what it really was there was just a bunch of stuff in there that I didn't need, that I was saving, like a hoodie, you know, like a old hoodie from some, you know, company that we did an ad for a million years ago or whatever. And it's like, I just don't need all this stuff. And I feel like this whole decluttering thing, isn't it really just, we just need to have less stuff? And I know that I'm a person who acquires a lot of stuff, but it's like, everybody just needs to go through their house and go, have I used this charger for an outdated cell phone? No, put it in that pile over there and take it to Goodwill. I mean, it just seems like the Marie Kondo thing is really just, everybody get rid of all the stuff you're not using, which seems like both a hard and a fairly simple concept.
I mean, isn't that what made her famous, though? Isn't that exactly what made her famous, was that concept? I mean, I haven't seen the TV show and I haven't read her book, but I mean, I know her name. Her name, I think, became a household name because she said, yes, look at every object in your house. If you haven't used it in a certain amount of time or if it doesn't bring you joy, get rid of it. That's like her whole bottom line. Are you saying that it's not, that it's true, you agree with that premise, but there's not enough there to build a whole TV show around?
Well, I enjoyed the TV show because they, what they do smartly is they, it's almost like a relationship show. It ends up being about the two people who live in the house and how they relate to each other. And really what it is the low-level annoyance they feel with each other over not being more tidy. So I'll watch that shit till the cows come home. But it's the show itself, as far as the decluttering goes, it really is just come into a room. Oh, hey, your bedroom is a disaster. Take everything out of your closet. Oh, you're not wearing any of it. 80% of that clothing is stuff you're not wearing. Take it to Goodwill or take it to the consignment store or something. Like, that's – it just seems like a fairly simple message. Now, also, maybe I'm not – maybe I just don't have the kind of wiring of a person who's overly sentimental about stuff. Like, there's a lot of people crying about parting with a T-shirt. And obviously at that point, it's not even about the T-shirt, right? It's about some other, like, it represents something else emotionally for people, I guess. And that's the part where I don't want to be glib because, you know, everyone's on the journey they're on. And for some people, getting rid of a T-shirt is harder than for other people. I guess I'm one of the people who, like, I'm just like, do I ever wear that shirt? No. Well, then why would I want to keep it around? Although that's a relatively new thing for me. I brought T-shirts into this house that I'd owned for 15 years just because one time I'd worn it and liked it. So I don't know if this is a fairly new development for me, but I guess I just feel like you could boil that whole show down to just like everybody go through all their stuff and then just all the stuff you're not using, just get rid of it. Oh, and also we don't like a lot of the stuff, even the stuff we're using, we don't need. I guess I use the ice cream scooper as an example because, you know, you could also just use a spoon like for that. Like, and like you've talked about this, Andrew. I think you and Genevieve are very anti-unitasker.
Yeah, like something like, that's going to sit on the counter. I actually think you can make a pretty good argument for an ice cream scoop only because
maybe
I think
I'm picking a bad example.
Yeah, I think that's not the best because it is – I mean, that's just me personally. Like, yes, you can eat it with a – you can pull it out of the thing with a spoon. But if you're actually going to eat it out of a bowl like a human and not out of the tub like an Andrew, I kind of like the shape. But I understand what you're saying. Like,
yeah,
I mean, because it seems like – yeah, you could, like, for example, I make rice in a pot. I know I could make rice better if I had a device that just made rice, a rice steamer, which everybody says you should get. But I'm like, well, then I got this thing that has to sit on my counter because I don't have room for it anywhere else. And then when you combine the rice cooker with the salad spinner, with the coffee grinder, with the thing, I mean, eventually you're kind of out of room. So, yeah, I'm trying to – Veeves and I think I mostly follow Veeves' lead on that too. We try to be careful about – especially if it's going to be a countertop unitasker.
You know, I think maybe – where I'm actually going with this whole conversation is about the fact that I'm finally coming around to that approach of life, which is, and I've documented it extensively on this show, my tendency to want to acquire things to try to fix problems in my life. Like if I decide, oh, I'm going to start trying to eat healthy and I'm going to eat more wild rice. Well, then the next thing I do is go find the like, whatever the highest rated Amazon rice cooker is so that I can start making wild rice so that I can start to, you know, have this new version of my life that I think I want to have or need to have. And what I'm finding out, and this is only in the course of the last few months, is that what I need to do first is figure out if the lifestyle suits me. And then at some point, if I really actually need the new product to enhance the lifestyle, then I can kind of consider acquiring it, but I don't need to acquire it in advance of the change of my lifestyle. And that's the difference in how I'm doing things right now. And that's something that you have talked about that makes a lot more sense to me now. Like that idea of, okay, if you start making rice 4 days a week and you're like, wow, it would actually really save me a lot of time to be able to cook this. After like 6 months of having that thought, then maybe it's time to really get serious about getting a rice cooker. But
Or like, 6 months of making that rice in the slightly harder way and then being like,
right,
you know what? It's clear that I am doing this. Let me just go ahead and not, because I'm sick of scrubbing the rice off the bottom of this pot. You know what I struggle with? This is not as practical and it's not as kitcheny, but We talked about it on the show. Remember I posted that photo as a show pick last week, which is a photo from 2007 of me and Genevieve dancing at some wedding. I didn't take that photo, but it was to track it down. It took me forever to track it down. And it was on my old Flickr page. Flickr was like my first entree one of my first entrees into social media. I had a page that I probably maintained for, I want to say 8 years, maybe more. And I got really into photography because of that. I think the social aspect helped. My friend was really getting into photography. So I got a good, for the time, camera, a Nikon. I have a D80. But at the time it was good and I invested in some lenses, and I got to say, I was really into photography, and I was going through my old Flickr looking for that photo the other day. And honestly, feeling that is less shame, you know, I was like, wow, you know, I did take some good photos and I really got into this for a while. And I was once again overwhelmed with this feeling of like, I should get a new camera because I have good lenses, but my camera itself is super old right now. I mean, it's just so behind the times. It's at least 10 years old, and digital photography technology has just gone so far in the past 10 years. So then I think to myself, I got to get a new camera and get back into this thing. And I'm like, wait a second, though. You took all of these photos with your old camera. Yes, you could maybe do more with a new camera now, but it's still the same camera and still the same lenses. Why don't you just charge up your old camera batteries and start seeing if you carry that around and get back into the routine? I'm like, yeah, but I don't think I'm going to do that because I'm going to be frustrated with my old camera. I think I should get a new one. I'm like, that is how they get you. That is how we get ourselves. Like, if I am really, truly interested in getting back into photography, the camera I have will certainly do me fine for the next 6 months to a year as I get back into it. But such a part of the draw is buy the new thing.
Yeah, I think that has just been so – I'll give you another example. This is totally not relatable. And it's not about actually acquiring a new thing, but it's just a view into my dumb brain. So I crashed one boat, and that boat is no longer part of my portfolio of watercraft. But I still have like a small what's called a runabout that's just on a trailer in the side yard here at Burbank Springs, and I have decided that I really want to try to get out this summer and do a little exploring, go around to the San Juan Islands, at least things that are close, you know, to me. Like, where I don't want to go in the open sea, but I want to tool around. I have a boat that would actually be good for that. You and I went out for the solar eclipse in that boat.
Yeah.
And
it was like a Hardy Boys boat. I liked it.
Yeah. So my thought was, at some point this winter or whatever it was, late fall, I thought, I'm going to try to do that this summer. I want to get out and really just kind of like, there's so much natural beauty around here, and I have this lucky opportunity where I can actually access it by way of this boat. And then my next thought was, well, you know what that means? I got to find somebody around here who will strip – like, I'm going to take the boat this winter to like a woodworking place and then have them sand it down and strip it down and get it like gleaming, like re-varnish it, because that's the whole thing with wood boats. There's a lot of varnishing involved. You're always in the process of stripping the varnish off or putting it back on. It's also called bright work sometimes. And in my mind, it was like, I cannot be driving this boat around – out in public unless it is like a gleaming, like something that George and Clooney and his wife Amal would be getting out of at the Cannes Film Festival. Like, this has to be the most primo looking boat of all time. And then I was walking, like thinking this for like a month or two. Who knows how much that would cost, by the way. Who knows if there's a place that does that. And then I had this thought the other day. I was like, how about I just use the boat for a summer and see if I actually am going to do this thing that I'm thinking I'm going to do, which is go spend more time out going around these islands. And if at the end of the summer I'm like, yeah, that was great, I was doing that all the time, I couldn't get out there enough, but the boat really looks like crap, maybe then, maybe after that, I could actually consider myself going in and do, you know, fixing it up, cleaning it up, making it look a little better. But how's about I like actually see if I'm really going to do this first? And I know that that's such a – this is my – you know, this is my time of breakthroughs that are not breakthroughs for normal people. But that was literally a breakthrough for me. Like, why don't I do the thing first before I make some radical change in advance of doing the thing?
Yeah.
Yep. We're talking about the exact same thing. Yep. For me, it's the camera, and for our made up person, it's the rice cooker. And so to bring it back to Marie Kondo, in a certain way, you sounded like you were kind of criticizing the show, but we've come back around to you actually saying this is a new revelation for you, sort of, or new ish.
Well, I'm not criticizing the show. I'm just saying it's not as I guess what I'm trying to say is there aren't really any. There's not a magical solution to organizing things, is really what I'm trying to say. The magical solution to organizing things is just having less stuff. And most of the stuff, a lot of the stuff that we have in this day and age is stuff we don't need. It's just like it's a visor from a casino in Reno that we got for free when we did a heart healthy walk to raise money for lymphoma. And like, and it's just in a closet. And it's like, well, maybe I'll wear that visor someday. It's like, no, you won't. Like, there's no. I was expecting her to have some magical words of wisdom about the actual thing of organizing, but really what it is just throw out 80% of your stuff, and guess what? You'll be more organized.
Yeah, I think, I mean, and then you do get into the kind of the spectrum between, you know, hoarding and whatever the opposite of hoarding is, because I think we can all associate with that feeling that you just described. Let's say it's not a visor from a casino, but let's say it's a let's say it is some sort of a cable or a cord, because I have a lot of cables and cords. I also keep them pretty organized and labeled, but I definitely have so many old adapters and cables and cords in this box that I could really get rid of. And it would actually make it easier to find the stuff that I use a lot more, certainly. But there's always that thing tugging at the back of my brain. Yeah, but like, what if? What if one of these days I need it and I don't have it anymore? The perfect example is, it's not a small thing, but, you know, I was messing around with TVs and VCRs, and I just really loved monkeying around with AV equipment from a pretty early age, let's say 12 or 13, when I convinced my dad, I think, to get me a second VCR player, and I started messing around with making videos and stuff and overdubbing things. And back in the day, we didn't have cable. We had, you know, over-the-air television for most of my life, but TVs started to come cable ready. So there's this small little device that I think nerds might know what I'm talking about, where there's two little screws on it, and you would kind of screw the over-the-air antenna onto that, and then you would it had a thing that would fit over the top of the cable. So essentially, you were taking the cable input into the TV and tricking it by actually putting over-the-air input through the cable port. And I have one of those things. Now, I used to have those things. I used to have buckets of those things. I could have Scrooge McDucked into those things when I was young. Obviously, that technology is no longer needed, but I can't part with – I have one of those and one like kind of the opposite of those, if you know how adapters work, and they're so outdated. But I'm just like, I can't get rid of this. First of all, it's a reminder of the way things used to be, and I just feel like at it someday – and it will be tomorrow if I throw it away today. Somebody's going to be like, hey, this is a long shot. You don't have one of those adapters that can take rabbit ears or bunny ears and turn it into a cable signal, do you? And I'll be like, son of a gun, I just threw it away. Like, that's the weird fear that I think all of us can relate to that to a degree. But some of us have it way more. And that's when you start to get into clutter and then into hoarding.
Right. I think that's a specific and you know, that's a specific example of a kind of thing where, to me, it's by the way, I'm not the expert on decluttering, and I don't think I am. But it's like, if you have a box of like, these are just all the odds and ends that I might need, and you keep it somewhere in your house in a closet, I don't think that's craziness because of all the things you just said. Like, there might be an actual use for it. And you and I have both had moments like when we try to do, like when we did the hot dog show, like, or we try to do some kind of an audio thing where we change up our normal setup, where it's like, we're both looking, did you have a, I mean, we always joke about like a mini to mini, like those like little things when you can't find the right, like RCA, it's like an RCA into a quarter inch, like that. There's a real value to having lots and lots of those different things around, because you never know what you're going to need. But then it's like, okay, that's one thing. But like, just in watching the first episode of this Marie Kondo thing, most of what it is like an item of clothing that someone's never going to wear again, or 87 pieces of Tupperware that don't have lids. And again, I can't even stress enough, this couple was not even they were nowhere near hoarders. They were just normal Americans. But I get, like I said, I'm just repeating myself now, so we'll wrap this up and get to emails. But I guess I kind of thought – I'd heard a lot about Marie Kondo, but I hadn't actually read her stuff. She seems perfectly lovely, by the way. But and mostly what she does is tell people that she doesn't have it perfect, which is very reassuring to people for some reason. I swear, this couple asked her 7 times, is your house totally organized? And then she has to go, no, you know, I've got clutter too. Because, like, people will feel so judged and so worthless if the declutter maven comes in. And, I mean, she's wisely, Marie Kondo is, like, a very sweet, approachable person, seemingly, which you have to be in that job because otherwise people would just feel so worthless. But like, it just seems that like these, all it is just we all have huge piles of stuff. Not all of us, but some people just have huge piles of stuff that people that aren't hoarders, just things that you think I might wear that someday, or I might use that piece of Tupperware. Like maybe I'll just put Saran wrap over the top of it. It's like, no, just get everything that you're not using, pile it up. If it's something that somebody else could use, take it to Goodwill. If it's something that can't be used, I guess take it to the dump, which feels bad, but I don't know. Is there something worse environmentally about something being in your house versus being at the dump? I mean, I'm genuinely asking. I don't know the answer to that. I guess if you replace it with a different piece of crap you're going to throw out later, that's bad because that's just more crap. But if it gets thrown out and then you don't replace it with something else you're not using, then I guess the total amount of that thing is the same. So I don't know. I just – at the end of watching the first episode, I was like, I will watch the rest of this season because I like to see these couples fight about dishes. But I think I got the takeaway message, which is just get rid of your stuff.
But your question about like whether or not – that's a good question. Somebody came by the pop-up kitchen where we serve the homeless on Sundays, and somebody offered to donate a bunch of plastic cutlery to us. And we're like, oh, thanks, but if it's not compostable, we only use plastic. We only use compostable plastic cutlery. And then she's like, yeah, but these things are already in existence. Like, you not using them is not going to blink them out of existence. Like, they're still going to go to the landfill, whether or not, you know, I use them at home, whether or not I give them to you, because they weren't something that somebody said, hey, I will go to the store and buy plastic cutlery for you. It's like, we have this stuff. There's no keeping it from the landfill now. Do you want it or not?
Right.
Do you follow what I'm saying?
Right, but the idea of, yes, I do, but I do think the argument there, and I am so far from having a small carbon footprint, it's not even funny. My carbon footprint is water skis, but like
snowshoes.
But the idea, I got to buy some snowshoes. I'm going to start snowshoeing.
I know, it's going to change everything.
Get a snowshoe outfit. But like the argument against using those that plastic cutlery is, yes, that plastic cutlery, that set of plastic forks and whatever is going to go in the landfill. But if you use it, then someone else, some other group, some other pop-up kitchen or some other church barbecue is going to acquire an additional set of that, and that's going to also go to the landfill. So you not using – in a perfect world, you guys not using that plastic cutlery means it could go to someone else who will then use it instead of a second set of plastic cutlery. If I understand
theory. Yeah, like let's say there's some other group down the down the road and they don't care about using compostable. Well, then, all right, yeah, I guess contribute to them because we're sticking with it. Anyway, I do need to check out that show, though. I mean, it's I have a podcast about cleanliness and straightening up and stuff. And so, you know, and this is really in the zeitgeist. And so I'll try to watch that before we record our next show. But, you know, I'm just not a huge – I mean, it is a form of reality TV, and I'm not really just – it's always really hard to get me to sit down and watch any kind of reality TV. I don't know why. It's just – and it's not like a judgy thing. It's just like – I don't know, when I'm on my own time, like the types of things I like to watch do not involve like handheld cameras and real life people for whatever reason. It doesn't give me that kind of cozy end of my day feeling. Like, it
doesn't
it gives
spark
you.
Joy for you.
Exactly. Right. All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man. It's not from a female.
We didn't get to the egg photo, but I think the headline said it all. A picture of an egg is now the most liked thing on Instagram. It was one of those deals where someone said, hey, let's try to make this the most popular thing. And for some reason, it worked. And there you go. And that'll have the record until something else gets more likes on Instagram. I guess the previous record holder was the birth announcement of Kylie Jenner. One of the Jenner clan had a baby or is going to have a baby. And now this picture of an egg. It's a nice picture of an egg, by the way. It's very pretty.
It is really nice. I didn't realize from the headline that's exactly what they were trying to do. Like, they actually took this beautiful picture of an egg, and I thought, oh, that's cool. They're just, this thing just took off. But they actually put in the comments, like, let's make this bigger than the Kylie Jenner thing. Let's make it the most liked thing ever. Right?
There's not, yes. And it. I don't know if they specifically mentioned the Kylie Jenner thing, but they did say, let's make this the most liked thing ever on Instagram. And maybe they did.
I'm looking at this. Beating the current world record held by Kylie Jenner. We got this. So, yeah, I mean, I guess somebody decided that they wanted to take on the Jenners.
Well, it worked. There's nothing more sad, though, than when you see somebody that's trying to get one of those things going and it doesn't quite work. This is why I said on the show last week, I've given up trying. Like, what it really is, as far as, like, TBTL promotion goes, is the idea of being seen as striving and then having it not work, that is too embarrassing to me. When, like, you got the kid who asked Wendy's for free nugs and then they got retweeted a kabillion times. That's, like, the good version of it. But then you'll see something that has, like, 2,000 likes and it's like, let's try to make this go viral. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, it's not working. Stop trying to make it a thing.
Yeah.
This is an example of a time when it did work for some reason. And I guess, you know, certainly there are, like, it's a nice photo. I don't know what kind of camera they took it on, Andrew. I don't know if it's a
definitely
Nikon
not a D80, man. It must have been something nicer than that for sure. Got to get myself
Absolutely.
A new camera.
Let's talk about emails and maybe even a V-mail or two. Anything sparking joy for you in the email of V-mail? I'm not going to stop saying that now for the next 2 weeks.
You and I both got this one. I like it because you were talking. You kind of blew my mind a little bit on, I think, Friday's show when you mentioned that it's not supposed to be called, or you surmised that there's no such thing as Legos. There's a toy called Lego. And the plural of Lego is not Legos, but just Lego, which I guess does make sense. And I tried searching for Legos online, and you don't see it used. It's all caps, and it's Lego. This is from Talia, I want to say her name is. American 10 in Sydney here. I guess America 10 in Sydney here. While I can't weigh in on the official plural form of Lego, I thought you guys would be glad to know that my Aussie friends are adamant that it's Lego, not Legos. Now, you need to take that with a grain of sea salt because instead of math, they say maths. And instead of sports, they say sport. But right or wrong, you guys are getting Aussier by the day. I'll call Barnaby and see if I can get you a visa. Big things await.
Can I bring the dog? Can I sneak the dog and cat through some back channels of customs, though, is the question.
They love dogs over there. They love dogs especially from other countries because it's a real window into America. Hey, you know what? This email reminds me. I had trouble saying maths there, like the plural of math.
Why do they say that? I got to I got to be
honest. I
didn't
notice.
I
don't know.
That's one. Did you know that going in?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, like that's a British thing too. They'll say he studied maths.
Mm.
I mean,
it's
I guess
to say.
I
why
can see
you,
the argument.
Why do you make
well,
people say that?
Because, well, I could see the, well, are there different kinds of math? So maths could be, well, I mean, is subtraction a form of math, and then is addition a different form of math? So that
or
would
geometry
mean,
versus trigonometry.
Geometry.
Yeah.
Yeah, that maths.
The algebra.
Like, the, yeah. I can kind of see it. It does sound weird to me, but I guess I can see it.
God, every now and then, like, my whole life, people were like, oh, God, don't, oh, man, when you have to take a trig class, it's going to kill you. And I always had this vague notion that one of these days I'm going to go into one of these maths classes that is just going to kill me. And somehow, maybe because I just became a podcaster for a living, I never had to take trig. I never had to take some of these
did
other
you take
high-level
calculus?
Math classes. Nope, never took calculus. How did I get away with that shit?
Kent State, baby. What's
Kent State?
What was
exactly
the math requirement? Because at the UW,
can't read, can't write.
At the UW, you had to do one, what was called, I think, QSR, quantitative symbolic reasoning, which was the math credit. And I put that off forever. I've told this story before, but finally, I noticed that there was a philosophy class that was also satisfied the QSR. A requirement. And I was like, oh man, they done messed up. They done give me a math credit for talking about, is there a God? And of course it was intro to logic, and like it is technically a philosophy class, but logic is the most weird, abstract, hard math you could ever do, because it's taking arguments and turning them into math problems. And it was brutal. I could not figure it out. It was total social promotion. The professor just was like, this guy seems reasonably nice. I'll let him. I don't want to ruin his life. And if he doesn't, if I don't pass him through this class, this guy's never getting out of this college. But that's the only way I got that handled. Did you not have to do some kind of upper level math when you were in college?
I must have. I have a vague memory of taking a some sort of a data analysis class that maybe helped me skirt that. I remember that was kind of fun and kind of maybe based in some basic logic as well. And I remember there was a lab aspect to it. I mean, I clearly got my degree, magna cum laude. But
what? Wait, really?
Yeah, but it was Kent, you know. I mean, no offense
hey,
to Kent.
Still
but,
don't, hey, don't yeah. Like, listen, first of all, you're in the Kent State Radio Hall of Fame, so
yeah,
shit
no,
talk
that's
it.
True. Somebody second of one all, time, sometime, one time, somebody did tape a black and white picture of me that they had just printed up to a window somewhere. That's true.
Listen, that's the Kent State version of being in the Hall of Fame. But that's actually really impressive. That's awesome, man. Good job.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I like to slip it in whenever possible. But yeah, so clearly I got away with something. But I also, you know, like I say, I wasn't trying to become an engineer. I was, you know, I graduated with a radio television production degree. That was probably like everything that I learned in that program. Like, I was taking those classes right as the kind of digital revolution was happening. And so I was learning about things that you could feel them becoming dated as we sat in class. You know what I mean? But it was still fun. Got to play with some. Oh, hey, this is what I want to say, though. We were talking about maths and how hard that is to say, which reminded me that it was hard to say 2000th episode. Which reminds me of this email that we got from Mark. I don't know if you saw this too, or if you even want me to bring it up, because it's just going to give us a stress headache. But Mark wrote, hey, dummies, I'm about 3 episodes behind, so I hope nobody's already brought this up. But isn't the 3,000th episode quickly approaching? I estimate it will take place in mid to late September. Have you started to plan your celebration yet? Time flies when you're puttering. Yeah, we haven't really talked about that, although as I fill in the show number from time to time on the website, I do think, oh, wow, we are getting close to 3K.
Man, I think I last week said we were on episode 3000, and I apologize for that. That was my mistake.
Nobody noticed.
3,000 episodes. God, it feels like we just did the 2000th. I guess what? So 3,000 is about – or 1,000, excuse me. 1,000 is about 3-4 years of the show?
Yeah, it must be somewhere in there if we're hitting 3K around 11 years in, 10 and a half.
Because we do, let's just say 300, maybe 300 shows a year.
Should have took a math class.
Maths, I think is what it's called.
Yeah.
I guess we should do something for that, right?
Yeah. So that's how Genevieve and I talk about our anniversary. Well, I guess we should
do
something.
I guess it's kind of like the question is, number one, will they let us back on Cairo Radio? Wasn't the 2000th episode on
Cairo? It was.
Cairo? I bet the 3000th is not going to be.
Yeah, the 1000th and 2000th, both were at, this is breaking my brain and my
at
tongue.
At the Neptune?
They're both at the Neptune, and I believe they were both live broadcast on Cairo
Radio.
I would say we probably do not have the same in anymore. There is a new program director who is going in a different direction.
Yeah, so this one will probably not be on the local radio in Seattle, but I guess we should. I mean, that's a good round number, 1,000 shows. We should check in every 1,000 shows and do some kind of an event. Okay.
Yeah, I like that. I don't know. You know, I got to say, I know this was a somewhat controversial decision, and I should probably be having this conversation with you off the air, not on the air. But I really, you know, we did the Neptune shows, which were really big and kind of grand because they're in this big old theater with seating and has a sense of kind of old school. Is regalness a word? Regality?
Sure.
To it, formality. But then on the other hand, after our 24-hour show, we instead, did a really kind of small, intimate, jam-packed show at a Seattle club that also has its own Seattle history, but a very, very different vibe. And I know a lot of people were bummed that there wasn't more space available, yet there was an energy about doing a show in a small, packed place as opposed to trying to fill a big theater again, especially given what we do. So I don't know. We should kind of talk about that. We want everybody who wants to be involved to have a seat at the table. But I don't know. I like the smaller, scrappier shows that we did. It seems to have a good energy for what we do.
Yeah, I thought that the Vanniversary show that we did at the Rebar, I thought that was a really fun show. Although I'll be honest with you, I have no memory of what actually happened. That was really quite a blur for me. Like, there were many moments where I just sort of came to on stage, and I was just like, oh, this is still happening. We're actually doing this right now, because we'd been up for 24 hours previous to that recording.
Yeah.
I think
that was drinking, by the way, for the record, for people who aren't familiar
with
that.
Much to Jen's chagrin when she got on the bus, on the van. She was like, this is not the... this is not the rolling party I was expecting. And I think we were like, yeah, dude, if we were partying this whole time, we would be dead. So maybe something in between. Yeah, I'm with you. I think that what we should do is, and we'll figure this out. And then the other question is, does it have to be in Seattle? That seems, those are the people that have, that's the main concentration of TBTL listeners. I feel like probably it should be in Seattle, but I'm looking at this email now. This listener lives in Florida.
Oh, really? Okay.
So
that's interesting.
So not that we should do it in Florida necessarily, but I mean, there's also an argument to be made for maybe having it somewhere where people who aren't just in the Northwest can get to us or something. I don't know. We'll figure it out. But yeah, let's do it. Let's do that. Let's do a 3,000th episode. Some kind of a special thing. So thank you. What was the name of that listener again?
I believe Mike, although I have closed that window now.
I've
closed
Mike,
that window. Whenever Andrew closes a window,
he also ends a podcast.
He also ends a podcast. So, speaking of, I didn't write down, the only thing I wrote down was you said something about a portfolio of watercraft, which struck me as
I wrote down huge prog rock hole.
I would go with either one of those. Which do you like better?
I like huge prog rock hole.
Okay. I am writing that.
And can I suggest a little music to go out on from this playlist from Button in Portland, put together by my daughter and with a bunch of songs that I hadn't heard that I'm like, I mean, this could keep us busy for a long, long time, which is good. Let's see. How about this song? By a band or a singer named Jay Som, S-O-M, J-A-Y, last name, S-O-M.
Okay.
And the song is called Okay, Meet Me Underwater.
That sounds good. I'll get it up here in just one second.
Okay, that's what we're going to go out with. Thank you for listening, everybody. Thanks for being a part of TBTL. We are going to be right back here tomorrow with more imaginary radio for you. Until then, go Mariners, go eat a bagel, keep it double great, and please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to me as I try to find the song. Why is I... Is it spelled O-K-O-K-A-Y?
No, O period K period comma meet me underwater.
Ah, found it. All right, perfect. And good luck to all.
Power out.